We are talking to our regular guests from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection today. I'm Jill Nadeau, glad to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Laura Sutherland and Michelle Reinen are back with us. Laura is the administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle is the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. We'll talk about what you should know about securing your information while online, and we'll also answer your questions. Do you have a consumer concern? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can always send us an email, and that address is ideas@wpr.org. Good morning, ladies.
Morning, Jill. How are you today?
I'm great. A little damp. It's raining down here in Madison. I don't know about the rest of the state, but my hair looks funny today. So how about you, Laura? How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I have a scarf on for the chill, but that's the time of year, I guess.
It is. Well, you know, this is, I'm sure you do know, this is the 18th annual National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And the theme this year is Do Your Part and hashtag Be Cyber Smart. What was the thought behind that theme? Who wants to go first on that one?
I think Michelle.
All right. Oh, they're pointing to each other.
No, it's all good. It's a great topic for us. You know, do your part, be cyber smart. That theme really comes from the fact that we all need to be completely engaged in this effort. We're encouraging individuals and organizations to really own their role in protecting their part of cyberspace, you know, stressing personal accountability and the importance of taking those proactive steps to enhance cybersecurity. You know, and throughout the month, we're going to share different tips on our Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube channels. But today, you know, we're going to go through the whole month's topics. You know, everyone gets a real big preview today if they're listening in about those different weekly tips that we'll be providing, because there's really four weekly themes that we want to, you know, break this apart so people can take it in pieces. And that's to that first one, the overarching, you know, be cyber smart. What does that really mean? And then fight the fish. You know, we're a big Wisconsin state, and sometimes you don't want to fight the fish to bring it in. But, you know, in this case, we need people to fight the fish because we're talking those phishing attacks by email and by text message and things. And then, you know, going through and exploring your experience and sharing information, but encouraging people to stop, think, and connect, you know, before they take any steps and react to things. And then that final week, we're going to wrap it all up, if you're following us online, with that cybersecurity first. What does that mean, really, with securing devices at home and at work? Because this, again, isn't just your personal experience. This can impact small and large businesses alike, and in that accountability in both your personal and your work life here.
That's a really good thing, I think, a good theme, just because I think sometimes we always think, well, someone else can take care of that for us, right? It's kind of like when you have a car, you need to have insurance, you need to have put your seatbelt on, you need to protect yourself. So it's kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah, that's a really great parallel there to think about it. Or, you know, other ways people think about it is we secure the house with a lock and key, and I hope that our valuables are there when we return if we lock the door type situation. And we have tremendous amount of valuables behind our online images, our digital footprints, if you will. And so, you know, that beginning theme, that be cyber smart in week one, using this month's tips to increase your awareness and personal security. So, you know, kicking it off and getting in is keep security software current. That's really that first thing, putting the keys in place. If you have the latest security software, web browser and operating system is the best defense against viruses, malware, and other online threats. You have to put a procedure, a plan in place to make sure you're reacting when updates come. Maybe that's setting it to auto settings. Maybe it's just you want to manually do it. And when you see it pop up on your device that something's there, you're going to react and go about doing that update. But you need to have that plan and actually act on that plan to keep those things up to date. And protecting all those devices that are connected to the internet. And you do that by taking that inventory. You know, you have to know all the devices in your household that are connected. Those are things from your computer, your tablet, your gaming systems, your television, your smartphone. It could be your thermostat in your refrigerator or your watch. You know, all sorts of things are connected now. And understand how they're connected, and are you using the defaults that were provided, or have you set passwords and things for them, and how you connect them? Is it just to keep your list of groceries you need on the fridge, or is there something more complex to how you use those? So that's another part of that first week inventory step-by-step process we want. Plug and scan, USBs and other external devices, they can infect by giving you viruses and malwares if you're not very confident about where they've come from and whose hands they've been in and how they've been used. So use your security software to scan them before you do anything with them, and let them have access to your device in full. Protecting your money. When banking and shopping, check to be sure that the sites are secure, that security is enabled. Look for that S in the HTTPS. That's that secure. You know that you're in a great place. Know how you're connected. Are you connected through your personal Wi-Fi that's secure? Or are you out on a public Wi-Fi? It's really important to understand how you are accessing things. And part of that, that's what you can do to protect your money and your personal information. And then also in this first week, again, while you're updating that operating system, you need to back up your device. And so with that, protecting those valuables. So if something happens, you have a solid foundation where your work, your music, your photos, your other digital information, all those electronic copies are backed up. And you don't have to feel vulnerable and fall victim to some of these scams where they're threatening you, that lack of access to your valuables.
Such great information. And I just wanted to go back and pick apart the protect your money one. So you look for the HTTPS, but most of them have HTTP. So it gets confusing. So look for the S for security, right?
Yeah, that's great, Jill. I'm glad you backed us up on that. Exactly. When you're just browsing topics, you want to find out information, you just are doing research to understand things, you're on the HTTP most of the time. You're just out there surfing the web, you know, kind of thing.
Exactly.
But when you transmit your information, your credit card information, maybe you're having to complete some other information about yourself, your name, your address type situation to proceed, you're entering a password, you want the S there for the secure, so you know that you are at a different level of security when you are connected to an organization or a retailer.
Do you have any questions about your security online? Give us a call. We have open lines, 1-800-642-1234. And Laura, why don't you talk to us about what's going to be going on week two, Fight the Fish.
Absolutely. So phishing, as we've talked about before, is just one of the more pernicious ways in which we see scammers trying to steal our personal identity and our money. Phishing here is P-H-I-S-H, and not with an F. And these scams, these email phishing scams, are getting more and more sophisticated. We get them pretty regularly at work, where someone is posing as someone within our agency, and they may have facts about our agency that makes that email look legitimate. It has morsels of truth, and it makes it look alluring. So really needing to be more cognizant of how these phishing scams work. So when you get those emails that look a little bit off, your radar is up. So, one obvious way to avoid being scammed is don't reveal any personal or financial information in an email. If you get an email solicitation and this is what they're asking for, you should really think twice before you respond and use a second source of information to confirm that that is something that the sender is entitled to and it's a legitimate sender. Before sending or entering any sensitive information online, check the security of the website. We talked about that just now. Michelle just mentioned that. So, you know, don't use websites that don't end in HTTPS for secure if you're transmitting personal identifying information or financial information. And if you're unsure whether an email request is legitimate, then verify it. Go to the company directly. Use a different form of information, a different form of contacting that entity, you know. Or if you get an email from somebody you know, and you think it's a little strange that they're asking for, you know, your any kind of personal identifying information or money, pick up the phone, use a different form of contacting that person or that company and confirm that that's a legitimate request. And then clean a machine. Keep all the software and internet connected devices, including PCs, smartphones, and tablets up to date. So when you do accidentally click on that link in an email that you thought was legitimate, you're not going to be exposed to malware or something else, something more pernicious. So basically, you know, the two things you need to think about to avoid phishing scams is to be skeptical of those emails that come in with links or requests for information that you aren't comfortable sending via email, and then keep your software up to date, because as I say, these scammers are getting more and more sophisticated. You may accidentally click on that link, and having your software up to date can protect you from these scams. You know, Jill, we get complaints about these all the time. They're very, very, very common. And as I say, we even get them at work. And, you know, they're getting more and more sophisticated. So really important to continue to talk about how to avoid them.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of times that we're a little bit hesitant to update our like operating system software because we've heard horror stories about when you update. But really, it's the best thing to do, isn't it? To keep it.
It is. And it's funny you say that. I often have a debate with my family because there are certain things that they like about the way their phone is working. And they know if there's an update, then maybe they won't be able to use it in the same way. Not a good reason not to update. Because as I say, they're getting more sophisticated and our software and our devices are keeping track of that, right? That's their job, is to protect us and to the best of their ability. And so they know better than we do how to address these new forms of scams. So not updating your software, it may keep that cool little aspect of your phone that you like, but it really exposes you to much worse situations, which is
absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Well, we're talking about consumer protection on the Larry Mueller Show today. I'm Jill Nadeau. Natalie Guyette is our on-air producer, and Trina LaSouza is our technical director. And we're talking about consumer protection on the Larry Mueller Show today. Michelle Reinen and Lara Sutherland from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection are back with us. Do you have a consumer question? The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Our lines are filled right now, so let's go over there. We've got Faith in Madison who has a question. Hi, Faith. How can we help you?
Hi. Hi, well, thanks for taking my call. My question has to do with my granddaughter. She has just started middle school, and her friends are starting to have phones, and they're doing lots of work on computers. And I am still very much learning how to understand computers and have no idea really how to protect her. And I guess I have two questions. I don't know if the person that is speaking today can address both of them or not, but one has to do with all the practical aspects to protection, the technological protections that are needed. The other is from a mental health perspective, is it even wise to allow a child to have a Facebook account, for example?
Ooh, I don't think you guys want to talk about the mental health aspect, but it's certainly an important question. Michelle, what would you want to tell Faith about that?
Well, I'll take the first question.
Yes.
And that is the practical aspects of trying to keep your device protected. There's a couple different avenues to go at this. One is you can certainly higher. You know, there are, well, one, there's classes you can take, you know, different free classes when you purchase your device, depending upon where you've gotten that from, to help guide you through how best to use the device and keeping it updated and things. There's different fun names for all sorts of those individuals who have that expertise within those organizations and companies. But the other thing is you can hire them and ask them to set it up, your device up, to be sure that it is protected, and they'll go through and show you what they've done. And then that way they're there for you, depending upon what kind of maintenance package you've purchased with that, to help support should something come up and you need an update, or if you've gotten a virus in your computer, they would be available to you in that regards. But then there's also other friends and family members who are always very open and willing and welcome to help. And sometimes a faith-based organization has something set up as resources for you that you can tap into, or community organizations. And then, you know, as it relates to the mental health topic, you know, talking to the school counselors in different things would be a valuable resource to see what their thoughts are on that. And Laura may have other tips to add to both of those questions. So I want to give her that opportunity.
Laura, did you have something to add?
Yeah, I do actually. I'll chime in a little bit. You know, one thing I would say, Faith, is to be sure to have conversations about internet safety. That is our most important tool, is communication. And we do, that's why we do this show. So people have a better understanding of how to keep themselves safe. Because once a scam has occurred, it's much harder to address the harm. It's much better to be educated. So starting those conversations early is important. I'll also say, at the U.S. Department of Justice, there is a great website about keeping children safe online. And if you want to check that out, there's some nice videos, and there's also some resources for families. And I have a lot of personal opinions about whether children should be online, but I'll keep those to myself. I will say that Facebook has a 13-year-old and over policy. I don't recall how old your grandchild is, but that is the policy for both Facebook and Instagram. And certainly there's a fair amount in the news today about the impacts of Facebook. So there's lots to read, and you can form your own opinion. But I encourage you to go to the Department of Justice's website for some tools and guides to help you have those conversations with your child and your grandchildren.
So Department of Justice website. And maybe if Natalie has a chance, she could go in and put that link on our program notes so people could get there directly. If not right now, we'll make sure it gets up there sometime today. So thank you, Laura. Excellent information there. Now let's go to Cynthia in Menominee has a question. Hi, Cynthia.
Hello. I have a question on text messages I'm getting on my cell phone number, and they're obscene. The person portrays herself as a young girl or some other type of lewd reference, and they're coming from a whole bunch of different numbers, and there's always, it goes to 19 other people too.
Have either of you heard of this before?
I've not heard of this as a scam, but or in that quantity, you know, of others participating. But the two things that come to mind right away for me is to contact your carrier, your provider, to see if they can put a block or stop or track that, especially since she's indicating that there's obscene material or obscene references there, and your local police department as well, to see if there's some activities there that they need to be looking into in regards to that. Those are the first two things that come to mind. But then the third is, do not respond, do not engage with these text messages, and just continue to report them, see what law enforcement has to say about what they want to do with that. And then if they're all clear, just delete those if they're all clear with you doing that.
you know, she might do for a short-term fix. There's a setting on many phones that don't allow you to receive calls and texts from people who are not in your contacts. So if they're not spoofing a contact number for the short term, you could just turn that on until they stop. That might be, a lot of people don't want to do that because obviously not everybody you get a call from is in your contact. But if they're incessant and bothering you, I would encourage you to do that so they stop.
Great, especially for short term. Okay, well, good luck, Cynthia. That's not fun to get those kind of texts for sure. Let's go on to Mary in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Where do you find the HTTPS? Where do you find that when you're looking at your screen?
Go ahead, Michelle.
Great question. It's up in the address line, in that browser line, where you would type, you know, if you were going to a particular website and indicate the browser address, it's right up there. So when you're on certain devices, they've shortcutted and just given a name. But if you hover over it, you see the full address information, and you can see whether it's an HTTP or an HTTPS up there. So that URL, if you will, but you want to look up there in that browser address line.
Thanks for bringing that to our attention, Mary. I guess I never thought about telling people where that is. So thank you very much. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. We have open lines, 800-642-1234. Or you can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Dennis in Two Rivers. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, thank you. I get email newsletters or whatever that have different articles listed, and I use Hotmail, so when I get my messages, it's through Microsoft Outlook, or I use Microsoft Edge, the browser, and that has a SafeLinks service or application or whatever, so when I click on it, it goes through SafeLinks, which then checks whether it's a safe link before it opens up the article in the websites.
That's fantastic, Dennis. And I wonder if there are other providers that have similar technology. And if they don't, they'll probably follow suit. Because, you know, these links, as you say, are pretty prevalent now. And they can really disrupt a whole business. I mean, not only can they corrupt a company, a personal computer, oftentimes what we see is you hear, and the city gets brought down by one of an employee's hitting a link. And so I'm imagining this software is going to be more and more prevalent. So thanks for that tip. And Hotmail, I haven't heard Hotmail in a while.
I haven't either. That's funny. That's okay. I have a Yahoo account. Sometimes people raise their eyebrows at me for that one, too. So, you know, if it works, it works. Thanks, Dennis. You know, we talked about the first and second week of your month of cybersecurity info, but we didn't talk about week three, which is Stop, Think, Connect, Explore, Experience, Share. That's a really long title. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. You know, this is about protecting yourself with these different tips. And it's really about taking that moment in time to stop and think about what you're about to do before you connect to it. And I'm going to start with a tip that's not even on here from Mary's question about where you look for the S. In that, one thing we didn't mention with that is don't look for a paddle lock. Don't look for a symbol that indicates that they are thinking it's secure, because there's some out there that just put a lock out there to try and fool you into thinking that you're at a secure place. But it's really about the address and looking for the S with the HTTP. So that is something to, you know, stop and think about what you are seeing before you actually connect and hand over your information. So thanks, Mary, for bringing that whole concept up so we highlight it. But our first normal tip that we are going to have is that when in doubt, throw it out. And these are things like links and emails. We've just talked about a few of those from a caller, different tweets and posts and online advertising. They often can come from cyber criminals that are trying to compromise your information. So if it looks suspicious when you get that email or information, or you've gone there yourself through typing, in an address and maybe you've mistyped it and they're at an imposter site, if it looks suspicious, and even if you know the source and you think you're pretty confident, it's best just to delete, throw it out, move on, you know, mark it as junk if it's a text message or an email. Just don't react and connect using that information. And then the next one is what I've said already a few times, think before you act. Be really wary of communications that try and ask you to act immediately. They offer something that sounds too good to be true, or they ask for your personal information. If you didn't go out there looking for it and you didn't make that connection all on your own, there's no reason you need to hand over your personal information to someone out of the blue that's just contacting you, as Laura said, through a phishing attack, if you will. And then your password. You know, this isn't just about a single word. It's about a passphrase, making something complex, maybe a sentence. Maybe it's the first letter of every word in your favorite sentence or music lyric that you haven't posted publicly on Facebook. You want to make sure that you have something that's strong to protect your information. We say at least 12 characters long. It's a combination of letters, numbers, symbols, capitalization, but something you can, of course, remember. But that is that, you know, that double lock on the house, if you will, that really keeps things secure in your online digital world. And then when you have unique accounts, having unique passphrases, not using that same password, passphrase for your logging into your email, that you log into your banking information, that you log into another account that keeps secure information. Maybe you use a password app. You're going to want different passwords. So should something get compromised, it doesn't all come crumbling down all at once in everything that you've used that same security word everywhere.
And Michelle, let me chime in on that one. Actually, that's a clue that we've always, or a request we've always made of people. And recently we've heard reports of scammers hacking into less sophisticated sites in order to then go to where your banking is. So if you're using the same construct to log into your Home Depot account or your, I don't know, that I shouldn't use a real name, but Home Depot is actually probably really sophisticated. But anyway, a smaller company that doesn't have a robust IT security, and you use the same thing, you know, construct there that you use to do your banking. Scammers are getting wise to that. So they steal these passwords in some places, and then they go into your other spaces and try to just start working with them and using them and having some level of success. So it's a pain in the butt to have 500 passwords, but you got to do it. You know, you just have to do it. So yeah, it's like having a different key for your house and your office and your car. You wouldn't want to have the same key for everything. So,
oh, but that'd be so much easier.
You lose that key, now what? Everything.
Everything's gone.
That's a great real world example as to why these tips are so important. And love that. Thanks, Laura. And the final one for this week's theme that we have is lock down your login. Now, we've spent a lot of time about what that password should be, but this is about using all the tools available to you when they are offered. And we're talking things like two-factor authentication. So having something, you know, your password and something else that you can get. They may send you a text code that you have to do through your text, but it's fortifying that online account to that strongest tools possible, biometric security keys, all those one-time codes.
Okay, great. And we do have a couple of calls. If you have a question, you can chime in at 800-642-1234. And let's go to Brian in Stevens Point. Hi, Brian.
Hello. I have an Apple MacBook laptop. And in the past, it hasn't been a thing to have virus protection for that, unlike some of the PC laptops. Is that still the case?
Yeah, There are different schools of thought, and you know, that is still what I'm hearing as well as the baseline. And the best people to ask that really is Apple and what they're doing as it relates to those operating systems and staying on top of it, and asking the geniuses at the Genius Bar, you know, what they're doing with their devices, because that is, you know, the model that's being set there. But that, you know, that's the understanding I still have as well.
Yeah, I agree. I have a MacBook, Ryan, and but I will say, one of the things, the challenges with the MacBook is that, or a Mac in general, is the more you import non-Mac oriented software, the more vulnerable you become. So I think on some level, you know, you often hear people with a MacBook, but they may bring in different word processing software so they can comport with their schooling or what have you. Then you have some vulnerabilities. But, you know, talking to the Genius Bar is your best bet.
And some of our experts that we have on once a month here to definitely promote having protection on everything. So there you go. Thanks for the question, Brian. Appreciate that. Let's go to Owen in Waiawiga. Hi, Owen.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Jill. So anyway, the realtor that I was working with the other day had sent me some emails that they wanted me to look at, looking for homes to buy. And at the same time an email came through from them, I also got a text message on my text messages on looking on my phone. So, of course, I look at the email first, and then I said, okay, I'll see what the text message is. And the text message was just a link, and it was almost like an address. I blocked the number, or didn't block it, but I erased the message since. But anyway, I clicked on that link, and it said it was from the realtor, and it popped up. It was a bunch of pornography that started playing on the text message. So, of course, I shut that right off. And I had a hard time getting the number off from my phone, even, because I couldn't block it because there was no phone number. It was really bizarre because I've never got a text message from something that didn't have an actual phone number. So I'm trying to figure out how that worked, too. And I've been told, I called DatCap and talked to them about it, and they weren't surprised. And they suggested that I contacted the realty agency, and the realty agency said that they'd actually farmed out that kind of technology to a third party somewhere else that handled a lot of different realty companies. So they weren't sure the origin of or why that would happen. And they said they'd get back to me, but I haven't heard back from them. So anyway, nothing else has come up, and I haven't opened anything from that particular agency since.
So that is such a typical story, unfortunately. And it's got all sort of the elements of a scam, right? You're engaging with somebody that you know, and then some scammer has that bit of information and sends you a text contemporaneously. And because you're communicating with that realtor, you click on the link. We've heard other stories similar but worse in a way, where there was a transfer of money. It was at the point of sale, and the realtor gets hacked, and the consumer sends money to a fictitious third party and loses it. And so the important thing is, you know, scammers are getting more sophisticated, and they are able to track. I don't know how they got this information. It sounds like the third party that's working with all these realtors may have gotten a hack. And so it'll be interesting to hear whether that's true once you get information back from your realtor. You know, another thing is oftentimes people are talking about what they're doing online, and that information can make its way to a scammer. Or you're searching online for houses, and that information can make its way to a scammer. But the salient point is that scammer had a little bit of information that was enough to make you trust that text. And that's what makes these things pernicious, and that's what we have to look out for.
Okay, Owen, thank you for sharing that with us. And let's go to Neo in Stevens Point. Hi, Neo.
Hi. So I just had a question regarding having passwords on different accounts online. And I know that a lot of browsers will have a feature that'll save the password for you so that you can just log into it automatically next time. I was wondering if there's any security risk associated with that, as well as saving credit cards and debit cards.
Yeah, there is that security risk of if that entity ends up being breached or someone gets a hold of your device, they would be able to, if they got a hold of your device, just log in freely and have at it, if you will, depending upon what that site is. And if you're saving your account information with a company, that's more information that they have readily available should they end up with a data breach. You know, they may be having to save it for a single transaction that you have in one area of their data. But if you're saying, hold this for any future use, tie it to my profile and everything else that's there, that's a higher risk level of information that they have available in your account should a breach happen. And when you hear about different breaches, you hear about those different levels and numbers of information for individuals. And it could depend on the layers of security that they have available for the information that they're storing. So there are risks associated with just allowing for really auto login and storing your information with someone. And if you choose to do that, because it might be what you need, you desire to do with the frequency you're at that site, it's really important to read that privacy policy, understand it, be comfortable with it, and what their security is, their security protocol and programming and notification. So you would be informed if a breach happens and have the ability to act and react to that information to best protect that information. But that all goes to this theme of your digital footprint, who has your information, and how you're letting them access it or maintain it.
Okay.
So great question.
Definitely. Thank you, Neo. We're talking about consumer problems with Lara Sutherland and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. What questions do you have about protecting your info online? Give us a call. We have wide open lines, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Join us tomorrow for Garden Talk. Tova Martin will be back to talk about bringing plants inside for the winter. That's Friday starting at 11 on the Ideas Network. And right now we are talking consumer protection. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we do have an email, but before we go to that, we did get a listener who emailed to ask us if you could share an email related to the Consumer Protection Bureau. Do you have one, or is it just an 800 number?
So we do have an email address. I mean, we should give all the information.
Yes,
so
go right
people
ahead.
Can access it today. I'm sorry, I just was stunned. But
yes. We usually say it at least three times by now.
I know, I had to think. So our hotline number, if people want to call with a question during business hours, is 1-800-422-7128. Our web address, if you just want to go and search all the information we have, is datcp.wi.gov. You can file a complaint there, and we have many, many fact sheets and all sorts of information there. But if you file a complaint, it goes directly in. And then if you do want to email us with a particular question, you can email us at dadcaphotline. So datcphotline@wi.gov. So most things are department initials, the DATCP hotline@wisconsin.gov is the email address.
And we do have a link on our program note. So if you want to not memorize the other, you could try wpr.org/Larry. So we have a link there on our program note for today. So let's go to that that, well, actually it was a caller who couldn't stay on, but she wanted, or he wanted, to relate an experience from their place of employment involving an email phishing scam. Someone at their company received an email that looked like it was from an employee requesting to change their direct deposit information. The scammer then gave them bank account info, and the employee made the changes. Just a warning that sometimes they don't ask for information, sometimes they're giving information. And the caller also wanted to know if people behind these phishing scams ever get caught.
That's a great question. So the answer is they're very, as you can imagine, very, very hard to catch, because oftentimes they're overseas and it requires coordination between countries to track them down. And that's why we spend so much time on education, because once you give away money to a third party in this way, it's really, really, really hard to get it back. And part of the reason they use these mechanisms now is that it's harder to trace. Now, in this instance, when you're talking about online banking, that's slightly more traceable. And it might be easier for them to catch them. And we certainly are aware of instances where there's a lot of, there have been attempts on the state government to have funds diverted to different accounts, and they're investigating those issues. When you're talking about paying in a gift card, which is what we often see, that is nearly impossible to address. So, you know, back in the day, if you will, wire fraud was the way in which these scams were perpetrated. And now the regulators have worked with the wire fraud or the wire companies to address those issues. And they have some stronger protocols in place to catch people before they send money away to somebody in a grandparent scam or what have you. So now scammers have turned to untraceable gift cards. So yes, they're very hard to catch. Having said that, the federal government spends a fair amount of time to identify where there are clusters of boiler rooms. So one of the things that the department does regularly is shares our phone numbers, that our scam phone numbers, with the federal government, and they use those in investigations, and they also use them to pool those numbers in order to identify where we're seeing more fraudulent numbers being utilized for scams. But again, you know, really, really intensive, cost-intensive investigations to identify boiler rooms in other countries, coordinating with other countries and that kind of thing. So the better part of valor is to avoid it altogether.
If we could, that would be perfect. Yeah. Okay. Right. Thank you for that message. And let's go now to Marty in Duluth. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good morning, everybody. We have for several months now been getting numerous phone calls from unknown numbers throughout Wisconsin. They've started coming in from California and New Mexico. We never answer them. They never leave a message. And now we're getting calls from Nielsen, also the media survey people. As I said to the producer, if 10 calls come in a day, 8 of them, and I'm not exaggerating, are from these unknown phone numbers. Got any thoughts about that, who they are, or how we can get the heck rid of them?
Ugh, how annoying.
Well, it sounds like a number of them may likely be just spoofed information. They probably aren't really coming from New Mexico, California, or Wisconsin. And doubtful they're coming from Nielsen type situation. It's probably that phone number being misrepresented to try and entice you to answer the phone, especially that Wisconsin being Minnesota, that border situation there. So it's good you're not answering. There are different apps out there to help block scam calls. There are service providers who have technology that you can use to block scam calls, or that they will identify that it's scam likely, so you don't even answer it. So contacting your provider to see where they're at with instilling that, they're in implementing that technology, so you can count on that. And then you can individually block numbers if you have a smartphone as well. But the biggest key is not answering, because it will multiply the calls, and you're not doing that. So that is that first step, is to not engage there.
Okay. Good. All right. Thank you, Marty, for the call. Let's go to Lisa in Wanakino. Hi, Lisa. What can we help you with?
Hi. Well, it's sort of complicated, but I'll try to explain. Christmas of 2020, our children gave us a very expensive gift certificate to, each night.
Oh, you're breaking up there, Lisa. Oh, I'm really sorry, Lisa. We didn't get any of that information. You broke up completely. Basically, I think is they got a gift card for the place they'd like to go, but the facilities are usually closed due to COVID. And so she's wondering if there's a way to get a refund. So what are the rules on gift cards or gift certificates?
They're federal regulations at the federal level, and that they can't expire within the first 5 years. And if there's going to be inactivity fees or deductions on the card for non-use, those need to be clearly disclosed at time of purchase, so you're aware of that information. But typically, if when there is a refund or return policy, if you will, that is posted, the store needs to honor whatever policy that exists at that time of purchase. So if the lodge had a policy of, you know, gift card sales are final until redeemed, they would not need to refund that gift card purchase to the buyer. It'd be honored. But if they did permit and allow for that, then they would need to honor that. And if they didn't, you could contact Consumer Protection on that. Laura, do you want to enhance that in any way?
Well, I started to hear her say that they're closed because of COVID. So I don't know exactly what the facts are, if they're permanently closed or if they're temporarily closed, but certainly if it's irredeemable because the business is no longer available or they're available in a different way, I would encourage you to call the department. This is the kind of thing that we work on a lot. We've got a fair amount of these complaints during COVID where businesses couldn't offer the services that you had pre-purchased. And so they can at least help you mediate that complaint and talk with the business to see if there's a resolution.
And the hotline number again?
The hotline number is 1-800-422-7128.
Great. Thank you, Lisa. Sorry we couldn't get the rest of your question. Hopefully we covered it for you. Let's go next to Tom in Buffalo County. Hi, Tom. Tom, are you there? Okay. Well, Tom's not there either, but he said that apparently he's putting his passwords in an Excel spreadsheet, but he's wondering if there is a better way to keep track of them.
I mean, I'm not a big Excel user, so I might be not the best person to answer that question. But I think I use a password app that keeps all my passwords safe. An Excel spreadsheet also has a lock capability, I suspect, and you can protect that as well. Again, it's not dissimilar to what Michelle said earlier. If you're keeping it on your computer and your computer gets stolen and someone has access to your computer, then they have access to all your passwords. So having it in a password app is then a cloud and it's transferable and then that's password protected. So that might be the better way to go.
Do you agree, Michelle?
You know, everyone has their own method. I mean, with the cloud, there's if that gets accessed, you know, there's always a question of whatever layer in security. So, you know, I know people who keep a list and put it in the safe with their other items. But then if you don't remember something, it's going to the safe. And so everyone has their method. It's what you're comfortable in keeping it secure and knowing what risks exist with what method you're you're using and combating those. But it's hard to remember them all. We do completely sympathize with that.
Because we're all there, unfortunately.
Right.
Yeah, for good or for bad. Now, I wanted to talk about that fourth week, but we don't really have time before the news. So when we come back, we'll talk about it. But one of the things I'd mentioned in the opening was the Mystery Amazon package. So if you could quickly describe that in like a minute, what's that all about? Go ahead, Laura.
Oh, okay. So the Mystery Amazon package is a scam where consumers were either called or emailed about an Amazon purchase that they did not make. For example, they'll receive an email saying their Amazon purchase for $499.99 is shipped tomorrow and to call this number with any questions. So there's the scam. They're asking you to respond. And anybody that orders from Amazon knows that you can log in and see what you've ordered and see when it's going to be shipped. And there's a secure way to communicate with Amazon. They are not calling you out of the blue and telling you about their order. So pretty prevalent scam, seeing a lot of it. Absolutely don't call that number back. If you think you've ordered something, go online and check for yourself, but don't respond to the call.
Great. Thank you. And I've got one of those myself. We're talking with Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. What questions do you have? 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Thanks for spending some of your day with us here on the Ideas Network. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. We're talking about consumer issues with our guests from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection today. Laura Sutherland is the administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle Reinen is Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Do you need advice on how to handle a consumer problem? Do you think you might have been scammed? Well, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So we did get a chance to talk about week four of Cybersecurity Month. Laura, I think Michelle wants you to cover that one. And it's a long, but I think we've actually covered much of this already, haven't we?
We have. And I won't rehash what we've already covered, but I will just hit on some points that I think are worth saying again and or saying for the first time, maybe. But the last week is, again, about staying safe online, both in your work life and your personal life. And we've given you a lot of information about how to avoid scams and avoid clicking on those links. This week, we also want to talk about data backups. That's an important aspect to this, because when you aren't able to avoid those links and avoid those scams, having your stuff backed up properly is a good idea. So there's obviously multiple ways you can do it. You can have a physical storage that looks more like a USB drive or an external hard drive. This method obviously allows for sort of fast and accessible storage, but it also can be expensive and it also can be set to fail. So your hard drive on your computer might fail, but also any other physical device like a USB or an external hard drive. We really recommend folks try to do a cloud backup if you can. Now, this is a secure online location. It's accessible from anywhere and it can be used from multiple devices. So in that way, it's much easier to use and it's much more adaptable. But it's expensive. It costs money. It requires a monthly fee typically. And so that's something that you'll have to put forward. But again, we keep so much important information online now that a cloud backup is probably the best way to go. And then again, you know, we are talking a lot about this at home, but we also have responsibilities of our work, keeping ourselves secure online at work and our work data. And so, you know, working with your employer and finding out what the requirements are there and making sure you're comporting with that is also super important. We hear a lot of stories about failure to do that as well. So work and home online safety is important.
And all of these tips are going to be available like on a weekly basis on your social media and YouTube channel. Is that right, Michelle?
That is correct. So we will be tweeting them. They'll be on Facebook and our YouTube channel. We're going to try and relay them, as you said, on a weekly basis. So sign up, follow, and you'll get reminders throughout the month.
And it's always good to hear those more than once. So let's go back to our phones. We've got Bill in Waukesha, who's got a comment or question. Hi, Bill.
Hello. How are you today?
Great. What's up?
Thanks to all of you for your help today. It has to do with, and I've been in and out of the car, but with password programs, specifically LastPass is one that we've not really used nor not used. We kind of half use it and are sort of afraid to take the plunge into just having it handle everything. So I guess I need somebody to convince me to just jump all into one of these programs like LastPass.
Who wants to do the convincing, Michelle?
I guess the way that I convince is you need to be comfortable with what they are offering you. And that starts with reading the privacy policy and understanding their security of how they're going to protect your password information. And then I think also looking online at ratings and see what other people have to say about that, the one you're choosing or trying to decide on, to make sure that you're not seeing anything with complaints or scams or any information out there and that they have a rating that you are comfortable with or positive consumer feedback. And Laura may have other contributions to how you do that evaluation, but that's where I would start with those three things.
And I feel for you, Bill, because I'm kind of in the same way. We here at WPR, our IT department recommends LastPass, and it's free to us. And I use it for all my work, professional work, but I have yet to use it for my personal. For some reason, I feel weird to put it all in one basket. So I understand, Bill. I totally understand. Thank you for bringing that up. Let's go on to Ruth in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. Hello.
Hi. What can we help you with?
Well, I got a really strange call, and I think it's a scam, but he never asked for money. He said I went to the Publisher's Clearinghouse, told me all a whole carload of stuff I'd get, and a bunch of other hocus pocus, but I let him on, and he never asked for money, and I'm starting to worry about that.
Hmm.
Well, Ruth, you got an oldie but a goodie, Publisher's Clearinghouse. Those scams just never seem to go away. And, you know, sometimes it's interesting that you said he didn't ask for money. I don't know if you have plans to talk to him again or how that call went. But oftentimes scammers will use a couple calls and a couple touches to get your trust and exchange information. Later on in your relationship, if you will, they'll ask for money or they'll ask for your personal identifying information. So maybe at the first call, he didn't ask for it, but that was coming. And it is a scam. Publisher's Clearinghouse does not call you out of the blue with an award. They do notify you. I believe they notify you in a letter form. And they're very, very rare. And you also have to, I believe you have to enroll. Isn't that right, Michelle? But this is one of those scams that it often makes it into our top monthlies because it's such a familiar name and people are accustomed to that award. And so it's just a scam that they try to capture that name and catch somebody. Michelle, do you have to enroll? Do you have to enroll?
Yeah. The baseline message with most contests and sweepstakes to really know is how do you win something you've never entered type situation. So if you've never interacted with the Publisher's Clearinghouse before, how come they're contacting you now? And even if you have entered and maybe you are getting, you know, magazines or something from them, still, did you enter the sweepstakes? I would still be cautious of a call because, as Laura said, you know, it starts with written notification and you need to do a lot of verification to be sure. And when you win something, you don't have to pay. I mean, you've won. There aren't things you need to pay for. And I know you said there was no money in this, but that's part of that ongoing nature of these scams.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I guess, and just quickly, the last thing I'll say, I said it earlier about other scams. If you have a question, you can call them yourself, right? You can look for a trusted source of information, find the number for Public Service Clearinghouse and call and report this. They might be happy to hear about a scam if it is a scam, or if by chance you did win something, you are calling the right source. Just don't engage with the person that's calling you and don't use any of the information that they send you.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Ruth. Let's go to Dan in Wind Lake. Hi, Dan.
Hi there. Good afternoon, everyone. Good program as usual. Hey, I've received many gift cards at Christmas time or whatever, and they're most of them, not all that I've had no expiration date on them at all. And the one I got from Quick Trip, which expired, was worth $50, and it's only good for a year. And I think it's a way of making money myself.
So what were your comments about gift cards earlier, Michelle?
Yeah, it's a federal regulation and they shouldn't expire within a year. There is an exception I didn't mention. And that is if the person who obtained the gift card did so through some donation, like some kind of charitable organization, and they bid in a silent auction and Quick Trip had donated the card or provided it as a prize. And then maybe they won this at a silent auction and have now gifted it to you. Those types of contributions by a retailer can expire, and as long as it is disclosed to you. So if you knew you had the year, that is an exception to that non-expiration or that five-year mark in withdrawal. Now, if you track back to how you obtained this and it wasn't through that, that is something that you could contact Consumer Protection about, and we can, you know, try and mediate that and find out what's happening there with that one-year expiration.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. We got some emails, one from Pam in Madison. She says she frequently gets fraudulent texts and never responds but blocks them. She has AT&T unlimited texting, and she's wondering if she switches to limited, might the fraudulent texters then have to pay to text her and consequently stop bothering her?
Pretty sure she's going to have to pay to receive the text from everything I understand about it. So that is not a method that would really work in that sense. The only thing I've seen is where people say no text, but then you have no data, and your smartphone, if that's what you have, becomes a little bit of a paperweight there. So still receives calls, and maybe that's the most important thing, but it depends how you use that device. So really make sure you understand what service package change you would be making with your provider and what that can mean for you as it relates to receiving texts and fraudulent or scam texts at that. You don't want to be paying for those.
Okay. A listener emailed to say they recently fell for a phishing scam pretending to be PayPal. Their credit card number was compromised and has since been canceled, but their social security number was also compromised, and they changed their PayPal and their email passwords, but their credit score accounts were frozen. Is there anything else that they should be doing?
Well, I'll say one thing they might want to do is call our hotline. We have some great ID theft experts that can walk you through all the things that you should be doing to make sure if your identity has been compromised, you've done everything you can to keep it safe. But it sounds like, I think she said she already put a credit freeze on. That's important, certainly, and canceling your credit card. Certainly checking your credit report to see if any other credit cards have been taken out or any other credit has been taken out in your name using your social security card or social security number. I would encourage you to do that and do that frequently. But again, I would call DadCap. They're very skilled in this, and they may have some other thoughts.
Okay.
Sorry that happened to you.
Yeah, that's awful. Just awful. Let's go to Tom in La Crosse. He's got a question. Hi, Tom.
Hi, I've been receiving text messages from a online loan company almost on a daily basis. I also get phone calls from them. And I've never done any business with this company. And, you know, I was wondering, is there any way I can protect myself against this?
I'll take that one too, I guess. If it's a legitimate company, quote unquote, and it actually exists, and you're on the no call list and you have done no business with them, then that's a violation of the no call law here in Wisconsin. And I would encourage you to file a complaint with the department and tell them, because that is a violation. And just quickly, the distinction between what you're experiencing, if it's a real company trying to sell you something versus a scammer, is that's where the no-call law really comes into place. These scam calls are also violations of the no-call law, but they're also trying to steal your money. So they could care less about a no-call law. But companies that are actually in the business of providing services and goods are required to register if they're going to telemarket, and they're not permitted to call individuals on the no-call list unless they have done business with them before and that individual has given them permission to do so. Sounds like you haven't. So the first thing I would do is file a complaint with the department so we can address that company. And then you should be able to block their emails in your email server, I would imagine. That would be the way to deal with that. Michelle, do you have any other thoughts on the email?
No, I think you've covered it with the options that are available. So,
okay. Well, good luck with that, Tom. That's got to be annoying. You know, you're talking about the consumer protection line and giving them a call, but it's pretty busy all the time. What were the top reported scams this quarter?
Well, the top hotline calls that we've received this quarter are unemployment insurance scams, the mystery package Amazon, which we covered before the noon hour break, and then the Social Security Administration government imposter scams. And so with the unemployment insurance scam, we want people to use caution. If and when you receive a call or a text that your unemployment benefits will be discontinued if you don't have, if you do not make any updates to your accounts immediately. And I will say I received this text, so I am familiar with it. And I was like, huh, don't recall applying for this. No, you know, so thought I was still employed. So, you know, don't click on those links that you receive for these types of messages. Instead, if you have an account, check your account through the website that you have utilized before, if you have done an application. Otherwise, you know, just always be monitoring your information, you know, as we suggest you do to protect yourself against identity theft and be sure there's no suspicious activity out there. But this scam is hitting us widely in the state in this last month and so, and even all summer. So be sure that you just don't react by providing this or being nervous about this that's out there. And the other one, you know, we covered the mystery package with Amazon, but then that Social Security Administration and government imposter scam, we've certainly talked about that in past shows. And as a reminder, it's when the Social Security Administration contacts you, typically by phone, and it's fake. It's an imposter trying to be the government to trick you into doing a verification and providing your Social Security number by verifying your account so your benefits don't get cut off or interrupted. Sometimes they even go so far to ask you to provide a bank account information so you can transfer that money in your account so there isn't any risk of a seizure of your funds because of the activity that's in question with your account number and stuff. They get very elaborate with this scam. But it is all just an individual trying to obtain your financial information so they can take your accounts, your finances away from you, and also just your personal information and continue on with that identity theft. So again, no, government is not making random out of the blue phone calls. If there is ever something curious going on with your social security number, you're going to get a letter. You know, you're going to get written to. You're not going to get that random phone call. And then certainly they're not going to ask you to verify your number from this unsolicited phone call. So a number of tips and clues with this one to just hang up if you've answered the phone, and don't return a phone call if you get a message.
Okay, another one that's pretty popular this time of year is the Medicare open enrollment problems. What are some of the things that people should be aware of at this time of year for that?
Yeah, that's a great thing to talk about, because Medicare obviously is really important to people. And so anytime there's a government program that's important to people, you're going to see scammers trying to sort of tap into that fear, right? They're going to use something that you count on from the government and leverage that to scam you and scare you into losing something. So here are some. So open enrollment is October 15th through December 7th. And so seniors and their caretakers should really watch out for fraud during this open enrollment time. And some of the common ways that we see scams, you know, it's an imposter scam. Someone will call and they'll pretend like they're from Medicare, and they'll tell you that they need your Medicare card number and your credit card number to sign you up for health coverage. Absolutely, under no certain circumstances should you be giving your credit card number and your Medicare number out to unsolicited calls. That is a scam, and it'll get you in trouble really quickly. Someone might call you and say that you have to sign up for Part D prescription drug plan. Most people know that are familiar with that it's a voluntary plan, so you do not have to sign up for it. And if you don't want to sign up for it, it's not going to make you lose your Medicare coverage. But every year we see that scam. Someone calls and says, if you don't sign up, you're going to lose your coverage. That's not true, and you should hang up if you get that call. We see people calling and pretending to be Medicare representatives and saying that your billing information must be confirmed. There again, no one from the federal government is going to call you and ask you to regurgitate really impersonal information over the phone. That is just not a safe way to get that information from you, and they're never going to do it. So anytime someone from the government purportedly calls you and asks you for your information, you hang up right away. And same with an alleged insurance agent or broker calls to offer you a great deal on Medicare supplemental insurance, Medigap plan, or Medicare Advantage private insurance. If you are on the do not call list, which we just talked about, these are unauthorized calls and they shouldn't be making them. And it could be a scam. So be very careful. And there are also, in some instances, door-to-door visits or phone calls from Medicare agents or governmental agents. The government is not sending people door-to-door during the enrollment period. But again, if you have questions about Medicare, go to the source. Go to a number that you trust. And this one is very clever. It's 1-800-MEDICARE. And that's where you get your questions answered. So, there is a lot of questions around open enrollment, and it's important to get information that you trust. It is also important to ignore those unsolicited calls because those are often scams.
All right. Be careful. We've been talking about consumer protection with Michelle Reinen and Lara Sutherland from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Hope you can join us tomorrow. Plant expert Tova Martin will be back with us to talk about bringing plants inside for the winter. I'm Jill Nadeau, in for Larry Mueller today. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. Stay well.